I got a minute.
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talk Twilight Zone. Go ahead. Go ahead, Dave.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. I'm Lynn, your host, and I'm here with Dave and Bobby and Rick Wall. Hello, guys. How's everybody?
Hello.
Fine.
Oh, good, good. Well, we're almost at the end of the line here. We're only, I think it's 4 episodes away from the end of the series, and today we're going to be discussing 2 of the episodes. It's 4 episodes away, so we're going to be discussing the Brain Center at Whipple's and Come Wander With Me. They're episodes 153 and 154 out of 156 episodes. And I'm going to, Dave, do you have clips for the episodes?
No, we discussed that prior to the
recording. That. I'm sorry, yeah. Yeah, well, that shows you how much I was paying attention. Okay. No, we don't have the clips, but they will be added later. Unfortunately, Robert is not with us, our other co-host, and he is going to add clips and things later on. So what I'm going to do right now is give the...
No bad reason, I hope, that he's not here.
No, he had... some things that he had to do with his mom and things like that, yeah. But everything is good. Nobody's sick or anything. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Brain Center at Whipple's, episode number 153. In 1967, Wallace Whipple, he was the owner of a vast manufacturing corporation, and he decides to upgrade his plant to increase output by installing a machine named the X109B14, modified transistorized, totally automated machine. And that leads to, as you can imagine, some layoffs. And some former employees try to convince him that the value of a man outweighs the value of a machine. But their protests, of course, fall on deaf ears. Eventually, the board of directors find him neurotically obsessed with machines, and they retire him. And Whipple joins his former plant manager at the bar opposite his factory and expresses deep sorrow at his misfortune. "It isn't fair, Hanley. It isn't fair the way they diminish us," he says. And now a robot runs his office. Oh, this episode was... not good at all. I mean, while it's true, you know, we've become a society that is very much dependent on machines and technology. I mean, can anything really take the place of that personal human interaction? How many times do we make a phone call to a business only to be bombarded with a recording telling us, press 1 for this, press 2 for that, press 7 and 8 for something else? And we never get through to the right department after all that automated crap. I just want to talk to a person, for God's sake. You know, and we still go into a bank once in a while, but most of us go to the ATMs in place of the human tellers for many of our transactions. Telephone operators, they're almost a thing of the past now. I mean, yeah, they still exist, but how often do we dial information or ask an operator to assist us in placing the call? Not much anymore. I haven't done it myself in years.
I did it once, and they told me to call the IP number.
Really? See?
Yeah.
See? There you go. There you go. People are just non-existent in the service industry anymore. You know, it's unbelievable. And this episode, it spewed forth a lot of rants and speeches until it made me want to leave the room or grab drunken Mr. Dickerson's gun and shoot the TV. I have very little to say about it. I could do without this episode. Basically, it bored me. Richard Deacon, I thought he was much more enjoyable as Mel Cooley in the Dick Van Dyke Show. He's a good actor, but this episode, yeah, I didn't think much of him in that. And the computers, I don't know if you noticed, but the computers they used were the same ones from the previous season 5 episode from Agnes with Love. But I can't even give this episode a 1. I just thought it was terrible, and I have to give it a 0. It's just really, really bad. So, you know, Bobby?
Okay, well, ho-hum, just another one of those season 5 monstrosities that runs less than a half an hour, but seems to be twice that long. It really should have been expanded and put into season 4 of the hour-long episodes, where it could have competed with The Bard for the worst episode of the entire series. It's just another cautionary tale from Rod Serling about just what might happen if technology runs amok and gets out of control. All talk and little action, along with an ending you can predict about 5 minutes into the story, you know that he's going to end up being obsolete himself, so there's no surprise there. Another teasy Troisen character gets what he wants and lives to regret it. Richard Deacon, one of TV's greatest second bananas, really never a big star, but if you go to Wikipedia, he's got a long, long list of sitcoms and other stories and movies, too, in which he was in for years. And, he was very dependable. As Lynn's already pointed out, he was better as Mel Cooley on the Dick Van Dyke Show and all the way back to Leave It to Beaver, where he played Fred Rutherford. And all he did was walk in. He never really did anything much in anything. He would just walk into scenes from time to time, deliver a few lines. He could be very funny from time to time. And even that was better than what he's left to do. Here he's got the spotlight, regrettably. And it's absolutely almost impossible to watch. It's not only boring, but it's annoying, especially at the end of it, when all of the computer starts screaming at him and it's all that. He's running around, smashing things. It's just it's hard to even sit through. It's really grim. So I've got nothing to say about it either. It gets my usual 0. What a surprise. Lynn?
Okay. Dave?
Well, I didn't get to see this. I only saw part of it prior, but I have seen it in the past. Of course, it's got a little bit of an edge in terms of, I suppose, it's another retelling of the Obsolete Man, which, of course, was a far superior story.
Mm-hmm.
And that was from the very end of season 2, I think. That was it. The other one is... It was slightly better in one thing, wasn't it? The with Love from Agnes or something. The other computer.
The one with Wally Cox, Wally Cox.
From, at least you can say that the computer was a little bit more like a computer. I mean, all that one had was like a little. For those who didn't catch it, was that was not far ago actually. It was season 5, episode 140. So only 13 episodes ago, but the computer in that just had a little flap that moved up and down. The printed word was there. The flap went down, and you could almost see the man behind moving the printed sheets in. At least this looked like an actual computer time. Have you ever watched any of the famous science fiction shows that were on there? They weren't that much different from these sort of cabinet size big fridge freezers. In fact, it reminded me of another one. Again, I'm sorry, I can't remember this one, but it was the episode where the people were sheltering on this cave on this planet from the radiation.
On Thursday We Leave From, or Old Man in the Cave?
Yeah, and they had a big computer in there that was running things for them.
Old Man in the Cave, yeah.
And it looked a little bit similar to that. And I think you're right about the that. Actually, I mean, I haven't seen all the work that he's in, but Richard Deacon is a well-known face even here in the UK. And as was mentioned, he's been in so many programs as a character actor. And if you go to the Wikipedia page, you can see that he was never really out of work. And he was also apparently some sort of a gourmet cook. But
yeah, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he wrote,
I think he wrote a couple of cookbooks.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you can always tell it's not a very good episode when we talk about what the actors have done in other work. Yeah, but in actual fact, my interest was piqued from the sort of, I saw a 5-minute clip. I couldn't get to see it all, but I wouldn't say, from what I've seen, let's put it this way, from not seeing the whole episode, I would rate it a 2.5. But probably when I watch it, because it's really a regurgitation and a poor regurgitation of earlier thoughts and scripts and themes that they've used before.
That's a good word for it. That's what I wanted to do while I was watching it.
You wanted to go into the bar across the road and just drink, yeah. It just
like
seemed rather strange
right
that the chap said, and this is what you can do with your pension, and then lamps him one on the face. I mean, in the 60s, even then, I don't think you could afford to give up your pension just for the satisfaction of biffing the boss on the face. Here in the UK, there's a big fervor going out. I can't even say the word, because there's the biggest TV program in the UK that's sold to 240 nations called Top Gear. Jeremy Clarkson, who's the lead man in that and who's made millions and millions of pounds for the BBC fronting this show, has just not going to have his contract renewed because he had an argument with somebody on the staff and ended up punching him in the lip. Yeah, producer punching him in the lip. So that punch on his lip probably cost him at least £5 million in earnings, $8 million and residual money. So very expensive to hit the boss. Don't do it, folks.
Is that right?
So 2.5, I think, but that's on a limited rewatch.
Okay. Rick?
Well, being a Isaac Asimov fan, I wasn't bored by it. Because, as you know, Isaac's books are really talky and very little action. Well, it's actually interpersonal conflict more than, you know, battles and stuff like that. You know, like iRobot and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Empire. And, I thought it was written fairly decently. Again, like I said, talky doesn't really bother me. It was a morality play. And as Bobby said, a cautionary tale if technology gets too advanced. And nobody mentioned that Robbie made an appearance.
Oh, my God. You're right. I didn't mention that, did I?
Nope.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you.
So just for that fact, I'm giving it a 2.
I bet Felix will be glad you mentioned that, because that's something he would have brought up in text, no doubt.
Yeah. Oh, Felix like that? Yeah.
And I was going to mention also, speaking of producers, I believe it was DiStefano that was inside Agnes that showed the written stuff out.
Oh, wow.
Or DeSilver, whatever his name was.
I forgot all about Rob. Who's making all that noise?
It's coming from Bobby.
Bobby, stop it.
I'm trying to stay awake.
He's trying to get the operator. He's trying to get the operator.
But that's all about all I got to say about it.
Yeah, Bobby wasn't feeling good today, and he's not positively.
Yeah, my allergies are driving me nuts, too, and it's snowing here again.
It is not.
Yep.
It's snowing?
Yep.
Shit. Oh, man. Oh. Well, anyway, I don't like hearing that. Okay, well, anyway, our next episode is called the, what the hell is it called? Oh, yeah, Come
Wander With Me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. All right, I do not have to tell, I guess I have to tell some people, this is the episode that I hate most of the entire Twilight Zone series. I despise this episode. I hate it with an absolute passion. With a white hot passion, I despise this episode. Okay. So, with that said, the Rockabilly Kid, you got this guy, Floyd Burney. He arrives in a small town. He's searching for a new song. Somebody directs him to the shop in the woods, run by an old man. He offers the guy money in exchange for an original song. The guy turns him down. And then Floyd Burney hears this voice singing, and he wanders off through the woods to find who's singing. And he walks and through the woods, and he doesn't see that there's a tombstone inscribed with her name, or with his name, I'm sorry, with his name that says Floyd Burney, the Wandering Man. And he keeps looking for the singer, and he passes this woman in a shawl, but he doesn't see her. And then next to this lake, he encounters a pretty but mysterious woman, Mary Rachel. She plays a song for him about two lovers who meet in the woods, and they're torn apart by tragedy. And he wants to buy the song from her. She says it isn't for sale. He convinces her to sing some of the song into his tape recorder. And at one point, the mysterious woman in black, who he passed and didn't see, she's watching. But he doesn't see her. And at this point, the woman appears to be a married Rachel who's in mourning. And sometime later, a very jealous young man named Billy Rayford shows up, and he confronts Floyd. And and the Rafer brothers, they're mentioned in the song, and Mary Rachel says that she is bespoke unto Billy Rayford. And he accuses Floyd Burney of seducing his bride, and Billy plans to kill him, and he's going to have his brothers kill him, and Floyd runs away, but then he accidentally kills Billy Rayford. And the song is suddenly heard on the tape recorder featuring a brand new verse that she hadn't previously sung, and it reflects the event that just happened. You killed Billy Rayford beneath an old willow tree. And that foreshadows a future attack. Floyd runs off. He's dragging Mary Rachel with him. And then she suddenly sings a new verse of the song where Billy Rayford's three brothers find Billy's body. They mourn his death. They vow to avenge Billy. And then they end up killing Floyd Burney. So, as Floyd's being shot, the camera turns to the image of the tombstone, the first scene, thus fulfilling the prophecy within the song. Oh, my God. This is absolutely the worst, to me, the worst episode of the entire Twilight Zone series. I mean, I have seen my cat Sebastian puke up hairballs more interesting than this episode. I've seen, oh my God, things in his litter box that look better than this. The story, it was boring. It was senseless and boring and pointless and boring and draggy and boring and sleep-inducing, and it was kind of boring. And this jackass ventures in the deepest backwoods to buy a song. And, well, okay, if it's a surefire million-dollar hit, this guy's supposed to be a rockabilly kid, and the song sounds like something that you'd hear at someone's funeral. But that's probably perfect because this moron is dead now, and the song tells about it. The first time I ever watched this episode, I couldn't make heads or tails out of it. It was many years ago, but I couldn't understand why everybody was doing what they were doing. But then every time I saw it after that, I figured out what this piece of crap was about, and I came to hate it more and more. Why did a rocker want to buy a lullaby? Stupid, asinine piece of horse crap. And the Twilight Zone episodes that are classic, excellent, good, fair, bad, horrible. But in my opinion, this episode goes beyond horrible. It's the ultimate giant cat hairball. It's bleh. And it's the biggest zero that I've ever given. And that's all I have to say about that. And hi, Felix. So glad to see you here, Felix, after my rant about this horrible episode. And now, Bobby.
All right. Well, let's get serious here. This hard episode is really no surprise after all of those abortive attempts at comedy during Twilight Zone's 5-year run. Serling had only one way left to ruin the series, and that was to turn it into a musical. It's virtually impossible to watch. It does make no sense, and if there's ever a series that shouldn't go down this path, this is the one. It's almost, it would be a joke if only it was funny. As I wrote in my review at the Twilight Zone Revisited and Review, suffice it to say that instead of a story about Floyd Burney, the folk singer, it would have gotten a higher rating from me if it was about Floyd Lawson, the barber from the Andy Griffith Show. That would have made a more interesting story. Now, Lynn has been whining in my ear ever since I met her about this terrible episode and how much she hates it. So I was predisposed to hate it from day one. But I thought to myself, you know what, no matter how bad anything is, there's always somebody somewhere who thinks it's really, really good. So I went over to a good old internet movie database, in which this episode gets a 6.9 rating out of 10. Most of the people there are neither here nor there about the story, although one did call it one of the best moments of the entire series. And when you go to IMDb, there are reviews from users of that site, and then there are reviews from supposedly professional critics. It usually turns out to be somebody who has a web page or, you know, does what we do at our group. And so I found one review over there in which this person says the following, and it's going to drive Lynn right up a wall. This is what he says about Come Wander With Me. He has a long review there with screen captures from the episode and a video, and he talks about it endlessly, describes every moment of it. But this is the most important part of his review. This comes from him, not from me. There's a majestic sweep and subtle cerebral horror underlining Come Wander With Me. I was deeply affected by the show and have never forgotten it. For me, it's virtually impossible to separate Come Wander With Me from Bonnie Beecher, Floyd Burney's personal hell, Appalachia, and its unique, brilliantly crafted episode of The Twilight Zone. Well, I'll say this. He was right about one thing. Come Wander With Me is a cerebral horror. My rating is a little lower than 6.9, like zero. Lynn?
Where can I find this guy so I can kick the crap out?
Yeah, you should go. Actually, what you should do, here's what I see you should do, because I, you know, at our group this past week, we spent the entire week listening to our best and worst episodes and best and worst actors and actresses, which we're going to do here on our last radio show on April 18th. And, of course, one of my all-time favorites, and many people agree, it was The Invaders with Agnes Moorehead. If you go to IMDb and you look under The Invaders, you'll be truly shocked at the number of people there who absolutely despise it. They call it boring, stupid. Many people say they don't get it, they don't understand it. One person said he turned it off in the middle, he couldn't get through it. I mean, I spent about an hour reading some of the most ridiculous things I've ever read in my entire life. So what I would suggest you do, and I took my review from our group, and I posted it there as sort of an antidote to what they were saying. You should take your review from our site and go over there and post it there. I suggest you do that.
Yeah, I probably will.
Just go to IMDb, type in The Twilight Zone, Come Wander With Me, and you'll be able to post your review. So I hope you will do that.
Yeah, I probably will.
Absolutely, totally dreadful. But you're always going to find people over there who will. Somebody's always there to say that. But this guy, believe me, what I read is nothing compared to what he said there. If you want to see his review over there, you look under there, You'll see user reviews, and it'll say critic review.
Reviews.
It's only one.
Right.
And he's right there, and it's absolutely astonishing. And he's quite serious. He's not kidding around. He really loved this. Put your own review there. They need to hear about it. Okay.
All right. And Felix, as far as the invaders, Felix says people, and he's right about it, people hate things that are like silent because they're a little different, like silent movies, you know, and it's unfortunate, but people can't deal with stuff like that. And that's true. Okay. Dave.
Well, I thought there was some things to like about it, and the story wasn't particularly good. I think the weakest part about it was the main character, played by Gary Crosby, of course, being one of Bing Crosby's sons, because he wasn't really much of an actor, but at least they picked him because he can sing. I mean, and the young girl, Bonnie Beecher, and this was her first debut acting role, she can sing and does indeed sing those sections. They're not that she doesn't mime them. They've not brought another singer in. She actually sings those. I thought that was interesting. It was also, although it wasn't the last episode to be shown, as you said, after this we have two more episodes, but it was the last one to be filmed. Now, that may well have been necessary for, because it was sort of an outdoorsy one. And maybe as well, they didn't know how much budget they'd have left for this one. And one of the things that Robert would probably mention is the fact that it's always a bit of a problem when they do these series, when you have, a song where you've got to pay copyright for the musician in it. One of the things here is also, as a podcaster that I enjoyed rewatching it today, was he kept going on about, it's public domain, it's public domain. Which must be a pretty early use of the word public domain in a TV program. The point he was trying to say is that, and it's happened in this country. There was a very famous hit, I can't remember the title of it, a while back here in the UK, and it turned out that this songwriter, he didn't lie about it, but basically he'd found an old street entertainer who learnt a song. It was almost like a gypsy, and he'd learnt it through the ages, and basically he got this brought up as a record, and it was I'm not even sure whether he actually got the gypsy to sing on it, and this was about 10 years ago, and it was a really big hit because it had a moving sort of a throwback theme to it. But the thing is, because it's never been written down and passed from hand to hand, there was no original owner. Or if it was, the original owner had been dead for more than 70 years, so it's public domain. So I thought it was interesting for that. The thing that Robert wanted me to mention as well, of course, is that the idea of using a song to help tell the story, carry the story, to give a slightly unusual twist to an episode has been done before. In particular, one reference is from an early Doctor Who story called The Gunfighters with the first Doctor William Hartnell. And before I just mention this, one of the coincidences here, very happy coincidences, by the way, is that this takes part in the American West. Of course, Doctor Who, for those who don't know, travels in time as well as in space, and so they've gone back to the old West, and it was set in the 19th century in the days leading up to the famous gunfight at the OK Corral. The reason why it's interesting is because that Bonnie Beecher, that was the singer here and making her debut, she also played Chekhov's love interest in a Star Trek episode called The Spectre of the Gun, and that was a Star Trek episode where they reenacted the gunfight at the OK Corral.
Oh, chicken.
So there's a nice little link there. And this is just a little clip of the Doctor Who, and this is where the song comes into that one.
Now then, Mr. Regret, you and the little lady step right down to the piano and give us a song.
The thing is, we're kind of a little bit out of practice, you know?
You'll sing here, now, and fast.
Oh, why?
On account that we're all music lovers.
Ouch!
When there's blood upon the sawdust in the last chance saloon.
You don't need guns to sing, Mr. Regret. I'll hold them for you.
Hey, now, come on, will you?
Shut up and sing, Fran.
You wait till I see the doctor. He got us into this.
What's the trouble?
Nothing. We just choosing a song.
And here's one.
Let's hope the piano knows it.
The Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon.
Play, maestro.
Hold it. Boys, watch the door. And when Holiday comes through there, blast him. Okay.
With rings on their fingers and bells on their toes, the girls come to Tombstone in their high silk hose. They'll dance on the tables or give you a tune for whatever's in your wallet. It's the last chance. It's your last chance.
And the joke there, of course, was he hopes the piano knows it. It was one of these player pianos where it's an actual rolling script.
Oh,
gotcha,
yeah. Yeah,
the rollers. Also, very famously, there was a, towards the end of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the seventh series Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I think it was in season 6, episode 7, they did an all-musical one. They'd very famously done an episode called Hush, which was mostly silent, but they did this one, which was virtually all music. And the point was that these people had to sing and say things emotionally that were happening in your life, because if you didn't sing and you ran out of words, then you would start to dance. And if you started to dance, you would dance faster and faster and faster, and basically you would... you burst into flames. You couldn't stop dancing until you burst into flames. So you had... Now, the reason why it was a very clever device for this is that building up to this within the series, there was about all the different people that were in Buffy all had little things going on. There were little, three-way love triangles, and there were secrets, and there were people doing things that the others didn't know about. So they all had secrets. And the point was that they got their secrets out by singing. And there were some very good people in Buffy who could sing. And the others tried their best and did reasonably successful. So here's a little clip from right towards the end, which this devil, this demon character that's that put this spell on them is just bringing it to an end. So here's a short clip from Once More With Feeling from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
You beat the bad guy. What a lot of fun. You guys have been real swell. And there's not a one who can say this ended well. All those secrets you've been concealing, say you're happy now. Once more with feeling, now I gotta run. See you home.
And I should just add, I think that the first time they showed that has actually had a longer running time. After that, it went down to a standard running time. And I think you can get that as a standalone DVD. Really good episode, non-typical, of course. So it's maybe with Robert, because of other programs where they've tried to do something different, especially in both those cases, long-running shows where they're trying to just break free. So I think this needs some kudos for trying something different. I certainly I don't think it worked, but I think that unfortunately is a little bit down to the Gary Crosby actor very famously, obviously overshadowed by his father, wrote a biography of his father 5 years after he's died, and didn't say too very nice things about him.
Yeah.
He appeared in a few programs on TV, but nearly all was typecast as a wandering singer or something in various different TV programs, like on Perry Mason, The Case of the Frustrated Folk Singer. And he also was in a film, Happy Girl, with Elvis Presley, as well as this Twilight Zone episode. But I did think that the girl singing voice was very good. And so I think there are things to like about this episode. I think with a different lead actor, this could have been quite a good episode. Maybe they were disappointed themselves. Maybe if it had been in the can in a better state, they maybe you would have used this as the last episode. So maybe it was a disappointment for them. They did try something well. It wasn't a success. It underperformed. And I just don't think Gary Crosby... when you're watching it, you know, she's declaring her love for him, and she's thinking, well, he's a right so-and-so. He's a scheming thing, trying to get, you know, he's trying to buy cheap something that's going to make him, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and he's offering £50. So he's not a very nice guy, and you're thinking, why is the girl fancy him? I think if they'd, and apparently it was supposed to be sort of the first time you had like a leading James Dean type of character on TV. But I think Gary Crosby has to bear the brunt of why this wasn't a success. I think as an idea, it could have worked well, and other people have tried this going forward. So I'm going to give this a 3 out of 5.
A 3?
Yeah, I am. But execution 2, but for the idea, I think it deserves an extra point for the idea.
Wow, okay.
Sorry.
All right. Rick.
Time for this show to end.
Okay, Rick.
Give it a 4. Go ahead.
I dare you. He dares you.
Oh, man. Come on, Rick. Let's
can
hear
I
it.
Talk?
Yes, you can talk. Go ahead. Oh, come on.
One of the worst episodes I've ever seen.
Oh, woo!
That was a dramatic pause to take it.
Yeah.
Make
me nervous.
To me, it would have been better if they did show the tombstone a little more, you know, like cut back to it, you know, and say, oh, this guy's a ghost.
Yeah.
But it really didn't, you know, make sense. You know, was this foreshadowing or whatever? You know, you sit there and you're going, huh, wait a minute, I'm confused here. And like I was telling you earlier, you know, a lot of this happens a lot. Simon and Schuster, the two, the artist and writer of Superman originally, they got $100,000, and DC's made what? $250 billion Superman. Nike gave a kid $5 for the swoosh.
That's right. I just read about that recently.
A kid who came up with Tony the Tiger got $5. And how much is Kellogg's made off that? I think it's Kellogg's, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Kellogg's. Mm-hmm.
That shows that this episode was accurate then. People do get ripped off.
Yes, exactly.
You know, So, you know, it happens all the time in creative stuff. My rating, 0.
Woo! All right. Okay, well, I don't know what Robert gave it. I don't remember what he gave it, but we'll hear that when he puts his... do you remember?
I think he gave it a 1.
He would have given it something for the concept, I think. The execution was flawed. But the thing is, it depends whether some people think that the music brings something to the table or not.
It was nice. You know, the music was nice, but, you know, it was just too different. It was just something trying too hard.
It sucked. But then that's just my opinion. Okay, well, that's all right. So we've got Robert gave it a 1. Dave gave it a 3. Woo, 3. And Rick, you're giving it a 0. And Bobby gave it a 0. And I gave it a 0. Okay. And Felix, do you have a rating on this one? I forget you gave it a 0. I'm sorry. Felix gave it a 0 too. Okay. So, yeah, half a zero. 0.5. He gave it a 0.5. He went even less. No, he went more. I'm sorry. He went more. He gave it a 0.5.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. Okay. So, well, I guess somebody has to like it. So Dave liked it.
Well, I like the concept. I think it wasn't a good episode. I'm not suggesting 1 minute was a good episode, but it had the potential to have been a good episode.
It could have been done better. And then maybe if it had been done better, I would have liked it. You know, but I, as it stands right now, bleh.
You know, like I said, you know, explain a little more that this guy's a ghost.
Yes.
So it's not such a disjointed story.
Oh, well, the first couple times I ever saw it, I couldn't make heads or tails. I said, what the hell is going on here? I didn't know what was going on. It was confusing.
I thought that was the reveal. You remember the one with the phone call where the woman keeps getting the phone call from her lover?
Yeah. Nothing
and it turns
stopped.
Out that the phone line or had actually
call,
landed on the graves.
Yeah.
The night call on the gravestone. I thought it was an idea using that idea, you know, based on that. That it was, you know, a call from the dead, a song from the dead. Mm. So that was a reveal, I would have thought. Like they did the reveal with the cable over the gravestone at the end of that one.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, if it had been done better, you know, maybe I would have liked it. Felix said he could hardly... It was an awful episode. He could hardly understand the stupid plot, and I agree. Oh, well, you know, live and learn. Maybe it could have been done better. But that takes care of this episode, and looks like we are down to the wire. On Saturday, April 11th, we are doing the last two episodes of The Twilight Zone. We're doing The Fear and The Bewitching Pool. And those are the final two episodes of the series. And then we're going to do one more show after that, a couple weeks after that, where we're going to give our...
No, 1 week after that, April 18th.
Oh, yeah. 1 week after that, where we're going to give our best and worst and of everything, of the series, the episodes, of the actors, actresses. So I really want everybody there for that. Oh, yeah, Felix, I'm sorry. We did Whipples. That came first. I'm sorry about that. What, did you have a rating for it? Because nobody was really, you know, that crazy about it. Yeah, it was Whipples, and then it was, you gave it a 3? Okay, so you were great. Okay, you didn't mind so much. Okay. Yeah, I forget. Now, what did everybody give Whipples? Dave, you gave it a
I give it a 3, but that was only watching watching part of it. It may drop down.
Okay.
Because I couldn't get to see the whole episode.
Okay, you gave it a 3, and Felix gave it a 3. And Rick, what did you give Whipples?
2.
2, okay. And I gave it a 0, and Bobby gave it a 0, but we did that one first. That one didn't take too long. But Felix, I hope you're going to be here in a couple of weeks for the last 2 episodes of the series, and then a week later for the best and worst. You're really lucky here for that. Okay, so I'm glad everybody was here, and I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of the weekend. And I will see you in 2 weeks.
Don't forget Easter.
Oh, yes, and happy Easter to everyone who celebrates it.
And happy Passover.
And happy Passover to everyone who celebrates it, yes. Yes, indeed.
And happy birthday, Rick.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we're early for, April 6th. April 6th, happy birthday, Rick. Woo! 32 years old. Wow.
I wish.
Me too. Oh, well, have a wonderful birthday.
Indeed.
Maybe I'll give you a call on your birthday.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, well, you guys take it easy, and I will talk to you all in 2 weeks. Yeah, happy to you too, Felix. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.